Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello, hi, welcome back.
Well, are you saying to me or the audience?
Both, you, them, everybody, me.
Well, hello, glad to be here. And I hope all of y'all are joining us at home, too. Welcome, everybody.
Yeah, sorry we missed a week there. Dad's theater needs were
oh man
intense last week.
Overwhelming. They're day and night to get the show opening. We opened last Friday, and this past Friday, and you know, the show went real well, but it was turning around from one that had closed 3 weeks earlier. And we had to change over the set and get everything adjusted and brought in and costumes fixed. And it was a all hands on deck type thing, working day and night. I had to say to hell with my job and go there and play theater.
Well, you know, it's all right. If you've got one more weekend to catch the show. So, you know, there's that. If you're listening to this and whatever, we'll release this on Friday, so you can still go catch, it's two shows, right, Dad?
Yeah, it's two shows. We got the condensed version of Cinderella, and it's about 50 minutes long, and then the condensed version of The Wizard of Oz, which is about an hour and 10 minutes long, and we put those together with a 20-minute intermission in between, so it's just like going to a regular theater production, 2.5 hours, but you get to watch two shows!
Two shows for the price and the time of one, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah, poor Charlie was like overwhelmed with everything that happened with Cinderella and with Wizard of Oz, and there was too much to think about, and she just started crying on the way home, said, so many wonderful things happened, I can't think about all of them.
That's a good feeling.
And Cooper just said, I'm ready to go to bed.
Well, that's awesome. That's good. That's a good range of reactions there, you know.
They're yeah,
worn
yeah,
out, done.
That's right.
Fully stimulated from the theater.
Yeah, and also I noticed on our Facebook page, the one that I don't know how you get there, the Neat the Booze Cast group.
You figure out how to get there.
But I'm there. I see it. Yeah. The Chew High episode got all kinds of traction on there. People sharing their favorite ones and putting pictures of the cans on there and talking about which ones they like. And apparently we have some Australian listeners that were really getting into it and that they had been there. And some sent in some pictures of their favorite place they hung out while they were in Japan and got Chew High. So
that's awesome.
That one was picked up some real traction on Facebook.
Well, and I will say, it's funny, because we just did that episode, and I went to the big liquor store in Manhattan, this place called Astor Wines, which if you're ever, I guess if you're visiting New York, you don't need to visit a really good liquor store, but if you live around here and you don't know about it, it's the best place. They have a huge selection. They had... wild, this is just a new release. Hitachino Nest now has a whiskey highball in a can and a sour plum highball in a can.
Huh.
Yeah. So Hitachino Nest, a very well-known Japanese brewery, you know, only been in the beer business up until now, but I guess our prayers were retroactively answered. I only got the whiskey one because that was the only one they had cold, and I didn't really want to have to go back to the store to get the other one. But it was good. It tasted like a whiskey highball in a can. Just that. It's whiskey and soda in a can.
Well, that's good. So they're like the Coca-Cola of Japan.
Yeah, they're going to come over here. And I wonder if they have these in Japan or if this is Hitachino Nest appealing to a kind of a void in the American marketplace.
Yeah. Yeah, what was the Coca-Cola one? Lemon Dew, I think. Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So now we've got at least those. The sour plum, the ume flavor, and the... the whiskey highball. So
yeah,
if you're a fan of Hitachino Nest or just highballs or just Chuhais and you're curious, keep an eye out for those because it's really exciting. I hope it's a sign of things to come. I hope that the heavy hitters are going to find their way over here. Fingers crossed. But hey, we're going to a completely different area of the world today, actually. I don't ever want to leave Japan behind, but we're going to leave Japan behind for this episode.
All right. Where are we heading today?
We are going to meet the traditional spirit of Scandinavia. We're talking about aquavi.
Woohoo!
So this is kind of inspired by a couple questions. We have a few people on the Patreon write in about aquavi. A couple people talk about it, ask exactly what it is, or even just ask for vodkas that have the flavor profile that's inherent in aquavi. So I thought it'd be a good time for an episode on aquavi. It's one of my favorite spirits to work with. So what is it?
What is aquavi? Taylor, tell us all about it.
Well, it's a distilled spirit. It's distilled from either potatoes or grain. The distilled spirit is then flavored with caraway and or dill. So that's like the flavor profile it has to possess in order to be considered aquavi. But other herbs, fruits, and spices are often also included. Those can be anise, mm-hmm. fennel, orange, lemon, cumin, cardamom. There's a whole range. Juniper berries. A lot of other stuff can get thrown in the mix. But it has to have that caraway and or dill flavor, like, forward profile. It is usually bottled at around 40% alcohol. It can sometimes be a little bit higher, but it can't go under about 37%, or else it also can no longer be called aquavi. Now, it can be aged or consumed fresh. It can range in color based on that aging from clear to dark brown. If it's aged, it could be aged in Norwegian oak. Also, it's often popularly aged in sherry casks. That kind of nutty, oxidized flavor is a really good complement to the sort of savory notes of the spirit. Now, there aren't really intense purity laws like we find with some spirits, so you can find aquavit out there that is artificially colored with caramel color. You know, by and large, if there's some color on your aquavit, it's probably from some measure of aging. Now, some etymology, because if you're familiar with other kind of old world spirits, the term aquavit might kind of sound familiar because it shares a root with a lot of other words. that is the Latin aqua vitae, or water of life. And that's actually the root meaning for where we get the word whiskey, Ishka Bitha, which also means water of life. Or in France, if you're talking about like the clear fruit brandies, Eau de Vie, also water of life.
So you can't live without these things. Every country has their own water to drink, and it's all got alcohol in it.
I love it, right? What's our water of life here in America? I guess that would have been our moonshine. It seems to be your earliest distilled spirit.
I would think that it was beer here. We got into beer early on. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's got to be distilled though. I don't know. But in any case, now I think it's just to clarify the timeline here. You might associate aquavit with the Vikings. It's an image that some liquor companies have definitely embraced and promoted.
The Minnesota Vikings?
I don't know if the Minnesota Vikings have embraced aquavit. I feel like that. Now Minnesota, that water of life is definitely beer. I think in Minnesota. I've known a few people from there, and a friend of there was a Minnesota bar for a while in close to my neighborhood that it seemed very beer heavy, very much in the beer world. But the timelines of the Vikings, the ancient Vikings, not so much the Minnesota Vikings, they're still around. But the age of the Vikings had actually passed by a few hundred years before the introduction of aquavit. So if you have an image in your head of Vikings throwing back aquavit and saying, "Skull," that's not quite right. The Vikings did drink, but they mainly drank meat and beer, sometimes imported French wine, if you're wondering.
I like one other part about that when they toast each other, they look each other in the eye while they're toasting. You don't take the eye off of the other one, and that comes from them not trusting anybody, and they don't want to take their eye off of them to give them a chance to attack them. So you always look them in the eye when you're toasting them.
Yeah. Well, that's also, I think it's from, I mean, this is, you know, myth, not necessarily real tradition, but the myth that part of the toasting reason is to splash some of your booze into your fellow man's booze, because if there's anybody that's poisoned at the table, now you're all poisoned. So you aggressively toast in order to slosh some of your booze into other people's glasses.
That reminds me of some of those shows where everybody's switching the drink around to try to get the poison drink to the other one, and they switch it around so many times they don't know who's got it.
That's it in The Princess Bride. It's actually, you just build up the tolerance. Now you're the Viking King. Not knowledge of distilling in Scandinavia can be traced back. There's like possible references to it all the way back to the 1400s, but the first like actual recorded mention we get of aquavit dates pretty specifically back to 1531. It's mentioned in a letter from this Danish lord Eskabil to Olav Engelbrektsson. Yeah, I said that. A Norwegian.
Olaf's angled rectum? Is that what you said?
Olav Engelbrektsson.
Oh. Son. That's you don't want to misspeak that.
No, no, I don't want to know anything about what you said.
Olaf's angled rectum.
That's bad. I'm against making fun of other people's names. So this is an old Roman Catholic archbishop. I'm sure he was fine.
Is it too soon? Is it too soon?
I don't think so. He's very, very long gone. In this letter, he writes, "Dear Lord, will your grace know that I send your grace some water with messenger John Teest, which is called aquavit, and the same water helps for all his illness that a man can have internally." So, of course, we get it associated with medicine. As we know, around this time, that's what everybody thought booze was.
Yeah, everybody, that's their excuse to drink booze. It's medicine. It's good for you.
Well, I mean, we didn't really know what it did, but it definitely did something. So I guess it's a fair thought. Like, I don't know. I mean, you know. Throughout the 16th century, you had, like, this sort of aquavit, how the distilling techniques and the taste for it spread throughout the region. Nordic farmers would distill their own aquavit. They would include sort of a rotating cast of seasonal herbs and spices. You know, in the summertime, it might be berries. But over the time, the strong dill and caraway profile sort of won out as preferred style. And it continued to be considered a medicinal aid. It was prescribed for everything from indigestion to old age to symptoms of plague. So alcohol makes you sweat. And so, oftentimes, like, a sweat is associated with, like, a fever breaking. So it's like, oh, yeah, it's breaking your fever. And it's like, no, you just got the booze sweats.
Well, not only that, you know, it makes me feel better. Well, yeah, you feel better if you drink enough of it. You think you're doing great, you know?
Yeah, I mean, at least these people that, I don't know, were prescribed a cocktail for the plague, they'd probably died happy, I guess. Or happier than other people that were sober and suffering from the plague.
I like that they said it's for old age, too.
Yeah, sure.
Get liquored up enough, and you start dancing a jig, and you think, yeah, I feel pretty spry, till you fall out the window or something.
Yeah, you know, the one thing that, of all of these things that it's traditionally prescribed for, the only thing that really kind of holds any water of life is the indigestion thing. Drinking alcohol, I mean, not so much the alcohol part, but depending on how bitter the herbs are. We've talked about this in the past, but like certain bitter compounds can make you salivate, and that is sort of induction of your salivary glands can aid digestion. So there is this tiny, tiny slight sort of maybe it can help with indigestion. All that other stuff, not so much.
Well, maybe, but the alcohol irritates the lining of your stomach. So it's kind of, at best, a wash.
Yeah. You know, just drink some nice bitter tea. During like the 16th, 17th century, a lot of royals got involved in distilling of aquavit. King Christian III of Denmark established a royal distillery in 1555. Prince Anna of Sachsens of Denmark was one of the largest producers of aquavit at the time. Her interest in it was very much medicinal. She was also like very much interested in like botany and herbal medicine, She developed over 100 unique aquavit recipes for treatments that were renowned throughout Europe. Not effective, once again, but they were renowned.
You need an excuse to drink in the morning? I got 100 of them.
I know, exactly. I need that good princess juice to cure my, I don't know, old age. Now, in the 1700s in Norway, a botanist by the name of Christopher Blix Hammer, he earned the nickname Father of Norwegian Aquavit. He was a scholar much more than a barman. He studied and detailed the distillation method. He was very into, like, local cooking traditions, preserving recipes. He wrote a lot of cookbooks, and along with those, you know, he would include proper distillation methods, flavors that go well with aquavit in infusion. So sort of spread the good word of aquavit. Now, in his personal life, he was very much a non-drinker, but he advocated very much for moderation, but he believed drinking liquor was a necessity during the winter, and especially for breakfast. In one of his many farmer's advice books, he noted that when rising early in the morning for tough labor, it is too early for beer. I'd rather have a glass of aquavit.
Sensible alcoholics drink aquavit in the morning.
That's a good, like, I'm going to go operate the, you know, 3-ton whatever plow. Let me have a glass of vodka.
I'm going to pour it on my cornflakes.
Why not? Let's get you started. It gets the blood flowing. I don't know. I Scandinavian winters are probably really cold. A little bit of aquavit probably helped you get going in the morning.
Boy, I'll say.
Now, of course, as our medical knowledge advanced, approaching the 19th century, and the surrounding countries developed more of a taste for the stuff outside of medical aid, who just enjoyed drinking it at this point, larger distilleries had taken it into, like, mainstream drinking culture. And each region started to develop its own unique preference for how they liked it made. So you have, like, Swedish and Danish aquavit tended to favor grains for their distillate, while Norway eventually switches over to potatoes. Danish aquavit tends to be more heavily dill-flavored. Norwegians favor barrel aging, while the Danish and Swedish tend to drink it young. Swedish aquavit is more on the anise side. So if you set out in search of aquavit, it's important to kind of note where it's from, and that's going to inform you a little bit on what you might expect from the bottle. All styles, you know, exist across borders, but this is just tends to be what sells the best in those given areas.
What I think is really unique about that is even though they have slight variations of it, that is a large area, and they all are in agreement that this is our drink of favor, that we will all drink, and we all love it.
Well, it's interesting, too, because it's a very... It's not at all unapproachable. I don't want to frame it like that, but it's very specific. A lot of times when we get the spirit that sort of defines a region, they have not less character. Aquavit has a lot of very specific character. So even though they're like, mm-hmm. Oh, we like a sherry finish, or, you know, we like a bit more dill, or we like a bit more caraway. It's a very strong flavored liquor. To be popular that wide, like, I get why, like, half the world loves vodka. Vodka tastes like nothing, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like this intensely caraway and dill beverage. So around, this is actually, speaking of a specific style, there's one, around the timeline, like 1805 is when this brand of aquavit gets established. This was a Norwegian type, so it was stored in barrels, sherry barrels specifically. And there's this story associated with it. Sometimes it's called Line or Lin Aquavit. And as the story goes, the distillery shipped some to the East Indies, but it just didn't catch on. It didn't sell very well. So they eventually sent it back. Now, this cross journey on the sea where all these barrels were down, you know, in the hold, where temperature was fluctuating wildly, where they were rocked around consistently... when it got back home and they opened it up, it was super good. So, yeah.
Hey, this is super good, man. Let's ship some more over there and have them send it back.
Other distilleries have tried to figure out if they could replicate the effects by, like, building machines to, like, rock their barrels back and forth, or, like, exposing them to a variety of temperatures, and nothing's worked. So now this one particular style, this Lion Aquavit, this is just what they continue to do. They sail the barrels to the equator and back to give it its proper flavor, or Australia sometimes. But they just
wow
put it in a ship, send it out, bring it back. You know, a lot of times this happens like celebratory, like around, like a lot of aquavit is consumed around like the Christmas holiday. So it's like, all right, just in time for Christmas, we've got our aquavit is back from its voyage.
They've got to have a easier way than that by now. This is the 21st century.
I mean, I've heard of there are other spirits out there that we still just can't figure out, because there's also the sea air, there's a salinity that factors into it. Because there are other spirits you hear that are like stored underwater and like emerged in barrels, so you get a certain amount of salinity in them. It's just, I guess it's something you can't replicate in the lab.
Do they have to have pirates driving the ship?
I don't know. I don't know if there are pirates involved. I know in my head it's definitely like a big old like pirate ship, but it's probably not. It's probably like a big, like a modern, you know, tanker or something. But
yeah,
I don't know. How much of it is also just tradition? It's just, you know, it's a fun celebratory thing. How much of it is just the story that a distillery tells? Because, you know, where's the proof?
Yeah. Well, I think they still got to use old wooden ships to really make it work right, because they wouldn't have air conditioning or anything, you know.
That's true, yeah. Oh, get your old. Oh, yeah, that's our aquavit pirate ship. It's been around for 200 years. It has one job.
Our mateys, we're taking the aquavit and we're going to bring her home.
We're going to bring it right back. That's a very low-key pirating job.
We'll be back in 6 months with the same aquavit, but it'll taste better.
A little of it might be gone. Sorry about it. Now, one kind of funny bit of history that I stumbled across in my research, in 1917, Norway actually had its own little dalliance with prohibition. So strong spirits were still allowed, but they could only be prescribed from the pharmacy. So,
that sounds familiar.
Yeah. and I mean, you know, they found a lot of things you could treat with aquavit, you know. Things like asthma, diabetes, melancholy, the Spanish flu. Lots of things were prescribed aquavit. But the catch was an individual could only get like 16 ounces, and that could only be prescribed to you. Once you got the prescription, you have to wait 3 days to get that filled. So you couldn't have a constant source. However, apparently you could get alcohol for your farm animals. There was no weight on that, and you could get up to 2 gallons for each farm animal. So, like, there are these, you know, stories of pharmacists prescribing just, like, you know, thousands of gallons of alcohol to farm animals, which we know they're not going to the horses.
You see the fields all plowed crookedly, the drunk horses pulling the plows.
A lot of cows with melancholy had to be properly treated. That makes me sad, a sad cow. Oh.
Aquavit milk.
I know. That actually sounds, I mean, that might be bad. That is one of the few ways that it's occasionally consumed, not with milk, but with coffee. So I don't know. Maybe there's something there. But up through modern times, aquavit has centered itself in the celebrations and traditions of the places it is made. Each country has taken on a sort of unique way of enjoying it. But a few things are in common. It's not traditionally mixed in cocktails. So you do not have, like, there are no classic aquavit cocktails. A lot of modern bartenders have it behind the bar. It's a great spirit to mix with. There's no reason not to mix with it. But there's not, like, if you're in Norway or Denmark or, you know, Sweden, you know, you're probably going to be drinking it straight.
You just drink it straight. It just depends on the temperature is about the only thing that seems to vary.
Yeah. And you should probably be drinking it with food. It's kind of abnormal to drink it without food alongside of it.
That's what I read. It said you can drink all you want as long as you're eating. But if you're just sitting at a bar and ordering that people will look down upon you.
And this is something that I think it's uniquely weird to American culture. And there are other places in the world that probably have this sort of stigma, but it's definitely an American thing where it's like bars are bars and bars are for drinking. And that's where you consume alcohol. And like restaurants are just for wholesome consumption of food. But around a lot of the world, it's always assumed that if you're eating, you're drinking. Like if you're drinking, you're eating. They go more naturally hand in hand. I think it's just more of our puritanical separation of like, go to this dark place and drink your booze, heathen. Other countries didn't do that. It's like, no, you're enjoying yourself. you shouldn't just sit there and get wasted. Like, have some food. Have some salty meats. Aquavit is good for, like, heavy, fatty, salty meats. It kind of balances out the flavor. It's also really good for, like, pickled fish is very popular in a lot of these cultures.
Have some herring.
There's this popular saying that Aquavit helps the fish swim down to the stomach.
Yeah.
Which is cute.
Well, it's kind of like the same lines as what you said about the little old Japanese lady that told you that it's all right to drink at the subway station as long as it's nighttime. Well, just don't drink there during the day.
Well, but I think, you know, it's interesting, like, in Japan, it's a similar thing you run across where, you know, like, izakaya, like, the Japanese more traditional bars, they're very much restaurants as much as they are bars. Like, you go there for booze, but you go there also for food. It's mm-hmm. You can go to an izakaya and only drink, but it's just sort of tradition that you eat at the same time that you drink. There are lots of cocktail bars in Japan, but they have been modeled by an influence of sort of the you know, classic cocktail bar that's inspired by, like, American traditional cocktail bars and, like, you know, mm-hmm. European traditional cocktail bars. So, yeah, it's an interesting bit of, like, it's weird to me, but it's also something that I think makes sense to more of the world than not.
Yeah.
Like, if you're drinking, you should be eating. What are you doing?
That's right. That's why I always drink. Eat pizza with my beer.
I always want to eat when I drink. Like, I just, you know, like, if I go mm-hmm. to a bar and there's not something that I can snack on, I'm like, well, okay, I will be here for two drinks maximum, because after that, if there's not a snack, I'm gonna be drunk enough to just complain that I'm hungry and that's gonna make me leave.
Well, this ought to go good with, you know, you see those, a lot of times in bars, you see these big jars of pickles on the bar and stuff like that. So this ought to go good with a big jar of pickles.
Yeah. I mean, I will say one of the most, the first form that I was introduced to Aquavit was in a Bloody Mary, often served with pickles. And I think that's far from the extent of what the spirit can do. It's a lovely spirit to mix with, but it is a natural complement to a good, like, salty, briny Bloody Mary. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So sort of a rundown of how it's consumed and when it's consumed. In Denmark, it's traditionally associated with Christmas and Easter lunches. They often call it snaps, or if you see the alternative spelling that looks like Akvavi, has the V in there. That's mm-hmm. usually associated with Denmark. Now in Norway, it's also drunk at celebrations, particularly Christmas, Easter or May 17th, which is Norwegian Constitution Day. And as I mentioned, the Norwegians like theirs aged. They like to drink it neat. It's not a shot there. You will sip on it. In Sweden, it's a staple of the midsummer dinner, and it's often introduced, like, you know, doing a cheers, a sort of round of shots of Aquavit would be celebrated with a snapvisa, which is like an exuberant drinking song. So you sing a little drinking mm-hmm. song and you take your shot of Aquavit. There's actually a this is cute. There's a popular Swedish drinking song called Hellengar, which translates roughly to bottoms up. So it's just, you know, sung as a toast. But the song was on some Nokia phones.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because it was obviously Nokia's from Sweden, right? Or it's Finnish. There you go. Mm-hmm. So they had this Swedish drinking song as one of the ringtones that you could program it on your phone.
Well, of course it's finished. If it wasn't finished, they wouldn't sell it.
Yeah, so very, very deeply associated with celebrations. Definitely something that you drink at social gatherings, at parties. Not something you just sit alone and throw back at the bar.
Well, one of the things that I read, it said that a lot of the different regions have their own way to drink it. And it said that and most of them, like you said, are all straight. It said in Copenhagen, during the winter, Aquavit is served with coffee that you alluded to earlier as coffee punch. Or
oh, yeah, yeah.
Coffee punch, something like that.
Coffee punch. Yeah.
Coffee punch. And they said that the drink is prepared by putting a coin in the bottom of a cup and then pouring enough coffee to cover the coin, and then adding enough aquavit to see the coin again. That's how you know that if you got the right mixture.
That's interesting. That seems like that wouldn't be, or does the coin stand up?
It must stand up. No, I don't think so. I think it's, you know, be laying flat. But you think about, like, I pictured like a 50-cent piece. You know, they're kind of thick. And that would be laying in your cup, and then you would cover that up, you know, put enough coffee in there where you couldn't see it, then add enough aquavit where you could see it again, where it would thin it out. And that would be that's how you mix the drink.
Yeah, it's cute. I'd like to try that.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting. And one of the other things it said, it kind of gave a recipe of if you wanted to make your own aquavit at home.
Interesting.
And it said that you don't have to distill it. It said that it's a starter recipe that begins with vodka infused with caraway seeds, fresh dill, star anise, fennel seeds, and lemon zest. Let it steep for a few days, and you'll be rewarded with aromatic at-home aquavit, ready to be mixed into a Bloody Mary or something more adventurous.
That makes sense, because that isn't, like, in a lot of the traditional preparation methods, it's not distilled with, like, the herbs and spices where, like, you know, you actually put everything in, like, the chamber and it evaporates together. It is sort of a separate, almost like a tea is brewed with all of your herbs and spices, and then that is married into your distilled spirit. So, it's actually pretty close to how it's made. So, yeah, that's definitely serviceable. If you can't find aquavit, you can make something that's a pretty good approximation of it at your house.
Well, I figure, though, most people can find it. If we can find it here, you can get it most anywhere else.
Yes. Dad has made sure this time that he can get this. I mean, it's fine if he can. We'd always work around things. But I've seen a bottle of aquavit at your house. I know Mom likes it, so I know it's in West Virginia.
Yeah, she hadn't drank all of it yet. I've still got 2 or 3 fingers worth in the bottle.
Yes. So we've got... We will be making some. I feel like I hope it's not insulting to mix with aquavit now that we've, you know, learned that the deep tradition of it says don't mix it.
Well, I am going to drink a shot of it by itself just because it sounds so savory that it sounds like something I might like. So I do want to try it since that's the way they drink it most of the time. I do want to try a shot of it.
Yeah, no, we'll definitely. So over on the video, we'll be sampling some aquavit, just giving our opinions on it. I've had it. I love it, but I'm curious, Dad, how you'll feel about it. And then we will be making a cocktail with it. Nothing too complex, but just kind of show you how to, like, if you buy a bottle and you want to know something easy to do with it, we'll come up with a recipe that's just easy, pleasing, requires nothing weird.
Yeah, no weird stuff.
I have a bottle in my house, and I was kind of messing around with it last night. I was like, I'm mixing the weird stuff with more weird stuff. I'll try to edit myself. Do something easy.
Well, I've been stuck on the whiskey sours ever since you taught me how to make those.
I'm glad. That is that makes sense that you'd like that. But yeah, whiskey sour is a great drink. We'll try to come up with something just as delicious. With aquavit. But hopefully you've enjoyed this. Hopefully this was informative. So if you're curious about aquavit, if you've ever seen a bottle on a shelf and you want to pick it up, I would encourage you to. Like a lot of spirits, I'd always warn you if I think it's something that's like aggressively like, some people love it, some people hate it. I don't think this falls into that category. I think it's very mixable. It's, if nothing else, if you like a Bloody Mary, it's great in a Bloody Mary. So there's that.
It's not a Scandinavian Malort.
No. Oh, the Malort episode. Dad still has the still lingering flavor of angry grapefruit on the back of your tongue, isn't there?
I've got the shirt to remind me, too.
I know.
Yeah. They did say that there is a distiller in Chicago that does make aquavit. It's South Shore Distillery or something like that.
Yeah, well, that's a good. Aquavit is not just made in the countries we've mentioned. Aquavit is made. Germany distills a fair amount of aquavit. There's aquavit distilled around the world. It's definitely catching on. I think it's one of those sort of second wave of, like, as cocktail culture expands, more people are trying more spirits, and you find Aquavian a lot more bar menus than you used to. So it's pretty easy to find. And yeah, there's a lot of small distilleries in America, Canada, throughout Europe that are making Aquavie.
Yeah, and in America, they said a lot. Most bartenders are really kind of using it as a substitute for gin or vodka to tweak the taste profile on their drinks.
Yeah, well, that's a lot of times. It's one of the best ways to introduce yourself to a spirit is kind of think about what it's comparable to, and then plug it into a recipe that uses that ingredient. And I would agree with that. Like, if there's a gin cocktail you like, it's not a one-to-one, but you could plug Aquavie in and you're going to get something that's not so wildly out of balance, you know? Mm-hmm. Or if you like infused vodkas, absolutely. You know, it'll fit right in. So, yeah. So I encourage you to try it out. Catch us on the video. We'll show you some fun things to do with it. We'll also just have some because it's tasty. And thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, and thank you for having me join you. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think this will be a good one. And I've got Mom visiting me up in here in New York, so she's going to get to drink my cocktails.
I know.
I've got the bar back.
I know. You're stealing my best bar back.
It's true. So we'll she'll get to drink the cocktails. You will enjoy them, though, I'm sure.
I'll have to just drink mine myself.
Well, that's all right. You get the drink to yourself.
That's right. I drink alone. Aww. With nobody else. That, you know, when I drink sad. Alone, I prefer to be by myself.
Bring one. Invite one of your elder children over.
George Thorogood and Delaware Destroyers.
Those are sad lyrics.
Oh, it's a good song.
I like those.
That's a great song.
Maybe. But I don't want to think about you drinking alone, Dad. Never mind. Tell Mom to stay home.
It's all right. It'll be after the show. Because we'll probably do it either Friday or Saturday night. It'll be after the show, so I'm going to need a good stiff drink anyway.
Well, that's valid.
All right. Always got to come home and unwind after those things.
There you go. Well, thank you so much for joining us. If you want to find us on social media, we are Neat Boozecast on Twitter and Instagram. You can email us at neattheboozecast@gmail.com. And hey, if you want to support us, we have a Patreon. We have all sorts of fun rewards, coasters with drink recipes, stickers. We have bespoke cocktail videos. We have one that just went up today. So check those out. Those are members only. It's our very exclusive online cocktail club. A less exclusive, but just as awesome online cocktail club is hosted by Dad over on Facebook.
At Neat the Boozecast Group.
There you go.
They're finding me. I may not know where I am, but they know where I am.
You guys.
Yeah, that's right.
check that out. It's a lot of fun stuff going on over in the Facebook group. All right. Well, thanks again. I've been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been
me.
Wow. I hope you like this because this is part of our heritage, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's what 23andMe said, that we're the biggest makeup of us is Scandinavian, so we ought to just take right to this like a fish to water, to Aquavie.
Aquavie. Yeah. Do not let your fish live in Aquavie.
Unless it's in your belly.
Unless it's a Swedish fish.
Oh, yeah. That's right. You've been hanging around your old man too long.
There you go.